Hello and welcome back to Tasty Debrief. This week we are sinking our teeth into the last ever episode of Game of Thrones, The Iron Throne. Let's tuck in. As always, the night is dark and full of spoilers, so if you care about that, then go give it a watch before coming back and joining us. As this is the final episode and there was a significant death, shall we have a moment of silence for that main character, whose name we are going to say in full. A moment of silence for Queen Daenerys Stormborn of the House Targaryen, the first of her name, the princess who was promised, the last dragon rider, blood of old Valyria, queen of the Andals, the Rhoynar, the first men and the free folk, lady of the seven kingdoms and protector of the realm, paramount of the crown lands, lady of Dragonstone, lady of Summerhall, queen of Marine, liberator of Slaver's Bay, queen of Dragon's Bay, Khaleesi of the Great Grass Sea, blood of my blood, Mysa, the unburnt, the unbroken, breaker of chains and mother of dragons.
She did manage to amass quite a few names before she died, which was fairly impressive. I don't think they've ever said them all at once in the show, though. There's got to have been a point where Daenerys was just like, I've forgotten what my name is at this
point.
I
like to imagine that during her big speech, she had some of them written on her hand and then it all smudged and she just didn't bother.
I don't know how to feel about that speech. It kind of started out that I was sort of a bit like, you did roast a city, but you are, like, it was quite impressive. And then she went off on a bit of a sort of weird moment.
Well, it's because she's finally accomplished her goal that she's had from the beginning. And so where do you take a character who's done that? Well, she's got to give herself a new goal. It makes sense. I think Daenerys is the sort of person who is never going to not want for stuff. She's just going to continuously drive for more because I don't think she'd be able to settle. She's become so used to being constantly on the move, doing things and having goals to achieve that she's not really sure what to do with herself now that she's actually got everything she wanted.
Sort of, she's always seen it from her perspective. Like, she genuinely, truly does believe that she's doing it right. Like, that's what Tyrion's whole speech this episode was about. That she really truly does believe that she's done the right thing and is doing the right thing and will continue to do the right thing. And then to sort of put that into a speech where she says these like quite sort of scary, horrible things, but with the complete conviction that she's doing it for the right reasons, made it a lot easier, I think, for some fans to accept like her death scene following that, because it just kind of showed that like there kind of isn't really another option for that. Which I quite liked. I thought it was quite cleverly done.
That's really well shot as well, her speech. Like that scene where you've got the dragon behind her, just stunning. I did a little bit of a as I was watching it.
Speaking of the cinematography, I found it really interesting that they delved into Nazi propaganda, where they held the marches and they recorded the propaganda footage. And a lot of it was stolen for this speech. Star Wars have done it in the past, and they've taken a good lesson from that. And to see that all happening with the surprising amount of Dothraki and Unsullied left? Don't know where they came from.
I reckon they're like the sort of spares that she set aside to not have in the Battle of Winterfell, just to like, you know, make sure that she had some left over to go after Cersei with. I don't know. But I definitely think it's an interesting point that they used so much sort of Nazi imagery, especially with like the colour palette of that scene as well. It's very sort of black, white and red. Like the main pop of colour in that scene is Drogon standing behind her, like the black and red dragon. And then you've got like all of her clothes are sort of, you know, quite dark grey. And then you've got obviously like her sort of shockingly white hair. It was very like that whole scene felt very sort of propaganda, and it worked really well because you can see two sides of it. You can see the characters like the Unsullied, the Dothraki, like falling for it, and then you can see Jon and Tyrion and Arya in the crowd not accepting the propaganda and going against it. And it was a really cool thing to like to use that kind of imagery to show it. I think it was really interesting.
Also, where did Daenerys get a giant Targaryen flag? Who made that for her?
Well, clearly it was the spare Unsullied.
Obviously, that's what they were doing in the Battle of Winterfell. They were just sewing a giant dragon flag. Just been like, I really wanted to fight this one.
Speaking of things to question in the episode, where did Grey Worm come from? You see him executing some Lannister soldiers. Jon walks past him towards Daenerys. Jon walks past him and heads towards the courtyard. And then suddenly, Grey Worm is behind Daenerys, just walking.
Drogon picked him up. Well, you see him land behind Daenerys, do you? Drogon just was like, oh shoot, we need him, he's late. Oh no. He just Floor over there.
Little scoop.
Yeah, just a little scoop. He's just scooping a lot of people this episode, apparently. So this scene did have a lot of sort of people dramatically walking up steps. One of those people being Tyrion, and I think this was a really, really cool episode for him. Obviously, the opening was very, very emotive and dramatic. It did look sort of briefly like he was sort of hitting Cersei's body in the face with a brick, but then I worked out that that was not happening, and I was like, back in. But him coming up the steps to confront Daenerys like that was exactly what I wanted. That line of like, yes, I betrayed you, and you slaughtered a city was really, really brilliant. I didn't think anyone was going to confront her that directly about it. I thought it was going to be Jon being like, we could have done better. But no, Tyrion coming up and being like, you did a horrible, awful thing, and I will not be the Hand of the Queen anymore, was really, really cool.
It's the most Tyrion has been since season 6. This entire episode, he was smart, he was witty, and he was willing to accept death. And he hasn't been this character since they dropped the books.
I think Tyrion was always going to be a difficult character to write without George Martin's writing behind him. But they definitely let him down at least a bit in sort of season 7, beginning of season 8. But I think it was really cool to see Tyrion as we knew him come back when he's sort of dropped the rose-tinted goggles of being like, Daenerys will be a good queen and my family can come through and they can be good people. He's lost all those things now, and I think it was a really interesting thing to see that, like, that was what it took for Tyrion to come back to being Tyrion. It almost sort of excuses the writing of the seasons previous, because if you think about it, like, for the past couple seasons, he has been living in hope that Cersei would be a good person and Jaime would come through and Daenerys would be a good queen. And all of those things were taken away from him in this episode, and that was the moment that we saw him come back to the Tyrion that we know.
He lost a lot of his cynicism. You know, he finally had a little bit of hope, and that ruined him as a character.
Yeah, and then all that hope taken away just brings us straight back to the Tyrion that we know. I did think he was... I thought he was going to die for some reason. Like, I did not predict it last week. Last week I thought, no, Tyrion is completely safe. And then I was watching this episode being like, oh, she might actually...
I assumed he was gonna bite it. He was one of my main death predictions. It was like definitely gonna be. Daenerys is not gonna let him live, which she doesn't.
It does confuse me slightly that in that, like, his betrayal and everything, he gets arrested. Like, great, that makes sense. And then when he's brought in front of that council of characters that I had forgotten about, like Robin grew up. It's weird, but. He was brought in front of that council and still somehow had all the power in the situation. And it was, like, very Tyrion, but also sort of threw me off just a little bit, because Sam is also a character who is sort of regularly listened to and taken seriously. And in that scene, they make the same suggestion, and Sam is shot down and laughed at, and Tyrion is taken completely seriously despite his beard and his handcuffs. It's like, I think I would have preferred it to be sort of Sam make the suggestion and be taken up on it, and then Tyrion jump in to, like, advise and guide them, rather than just have Sam be shot down. Like, it was almost like Sam hadn't had any character development, because he was straight back to sort of when he first arrived at the Night's Watch and no one took him seriously. It was a bit of a weird way to end, like, not end Sam's character, because we do see him after that, but, like, sort of a weird way for him to start the last episode, is like back at square one almost.
But everyone laughs at him, which is even Sansa has nothing against Sam. They seem to get on all right,
and Sansa's like so for the people as well. Like 3 seconds later in that scene, she's like, I'm for the north. The north can't bend to any foreign ruler anymore. Like, this, I'm for my people. And then Sam suggests that they let the people decide, and she's like, oh darling, no.
She snickers at him.
I know, it's ridiculous.
I think that's... I really enjoyed that, though, because it shows how up their own asses they actually are. It shows how the upper classes don't actually care about the lower classes. Despite what Sansa proclaims, despite what they all say, they want the power. And to just have this system where they still get to decide who's king and who's queen, but they don't have to let the people vote. I think that's the way that Tyrion knew how to play it. Whereas Sam was like, let's give everyone the vote. Let's make everyone happy. And it wouldn't, because they'd lose their power. Tyrion was smart enough to know that's a slow thing. Let's start with just the lords voting and go from there.
It makes a lot of sense for Sam to introduce it as well, because he has lived in a democratic system, because the Wall, obviously, they elect who's in charge of the Black Cloaks.
I think that whole scene was really quite cool. I forgot that Edmure Tully was a character at all until his moment where he stood up, and even then for a minute I thought he was Stannis. Took me a little while to work out who he was.
They've desperately tried to mark him out as a Tully, because they've just given him like 1,000 different fish icons on his costume. But it's not an impressive enough character to remember anything about, really.
No, and it was cool to see like other characters brought back, you know, like Brienne resurfaced, Yara Greyjoy came back, and then you've got like Robin, who's like suddenly a teenager and like weird. But there was a bunch of characters brought back that I kind of didn't really think about in terms of the ending. But I am glad that they brought them back and resolved all that and showed that like these people are in control and it's like the right people. I'm glad that they brought back Yara instead of Theon in charge. Like, I know that Theon's dead and everything, but like if they brought back like a representative of the Greyjoys or anything like that, like it wouldn't have been the same. I like that they've brought in all the characters that like we kind of do need to know how it ended up to understand like how Westeros is going to be after Game of Thrones ends. It was really cool to see that. And then obviously you've got like Brienne leading the Kingsguard and Sir Podrick, Knight of the Wheelchair apparently, but you know, a sir nonetheless. Like it was really cool to see all those sort of little character resolutions that I like genuinely did care about. Some slightly more important characters that were also sort of resolved in that scene and very quickly after. Bran being the biggest, you know, King Bran the Broken. Could have picked a better nickname for the king, Tyrion, but, you know, it's all right. How do we feel about King Bran? I know you called it, Liam, in a joke.
Yeah,
not against it. I mean, I'm glad it wasn't Jon, which I thought was going to happen, because that would have been the safest bet, because he's like a fan favourite. But it's a weird one, because, he doesn't want to be king. He even says, no, I don't want to be king. They're like, well, do it anyway. So, sure, fine, I guess. I don't know. It's an interesting choice. I'll give him that, you know. Why not have the man who can see everything that's ever happened, ever?
I am slightly concerned about Bran being king, because the first thing we see him do, like, when a small council meeting is called, he turns up, goes, you guys got this? Cool, I'm gonna go find a dragon. And he's supposed to be like a really brilliant king, but like he just leaves them squabbling like children.
I don't have really any problem with Bran. I do have a problem with some of his small council members. Whose idea was it to put Bronn in charge of the treasury?
It's literally the worst idea I think they've had all season.
Who did that? Yeah, whoever it was should not be in the position where they are hiring members of the small council.
I think it was Tyrion, which is really annoying because Bronn was going to kill him. But also, like, who looks at the sellsword, cutthroat, very often straight up traitor, and goes, yeah, no, he's a good idea to have in charge of all the money. He's not going to spend it or anything. He's not going to lend it out to his mates or, you know, fund only the rebuilding of brothels because he's a weirdo.
It's Tyrion's fault for giving him Highgarden, the richest place in all of Westeros. So basically, it's a clever move made from Tyrion's stupidity to get the man who has the most money in the Empire to be Master of Coin to fund the Empire.
I mean, it makes sense. It's just annoying that it's Bronn.
Give him a clerk or something who's a member of the small council. Don't give it to the actual Bronn. He will steal it.
But he already has the money.
He should not be in charge of the money he has.
He also just shouldn't be Lord of Highgarden. That was a stupid move on Tyrion's part.
To be fair, he did have a crossbow pointed at him by a madman at the time.
He did, but he's been there before and not given the person Highgarden.
I didn't think he had Highgarden to offer before.
Well, no, but that's not the point.
Are you saying he wouldn't have offered Mad Bald Man in a cell Highgarden if he could? Back, yes. Way back in the area, I think he'd have offered him Highgarden if he was able
he
to.
He wouldn't have given Maud Highgarden.
I think he'd have given Maud Highgarden.
I don't think he would. I think the best he would have given Maud would be, like, you know, a house somewhere.
Casterly Rock. I reckon he'd give him Casterly Rock.
Who is Lord of Casterly Rock now? Because Tyrion's the Hand, so he can't be at Casterly Rock, but he's also the last Lannister.
He is the Lord of Casterly Rock.
Right, but they're supposed to be, like, the Lord of Casterly Rock is kind of supposed to live there.
Not always.
Tywin didn't.
Tywin kind of sent other people to do it. He sent other Lannisters.
We don't know Tyrion hasn't sent somebody else.
He sent... But Tywin sent other Lannisters. Who's Tyrion sent?
I don't know. I'm sure Tyrion's got children.
Lannisters get around. There are going to be a load of Lannisters all over Westeros.
Okay, but here's the thing is that primarily the Lannisters got around in King's Landing, which was very recently toasted. So presumably the majority of the sort of rogue Lannisters are no more. And, you know, those that are Lannisters are probably not going to want to say so at this point. They'll just be like, no, my dad was a different dwarf. It wasn't him. Ignore the fact that I look identical to Tyrion. It's not him. But, like, it just really annoys me that, like, they spent a long time wrapping up everything else and just, like, left Casterly Rock undefined in how it's left. Because, like, yes, Tyrion should technically be Lord of Casterly Rock, but also, like, as the Hand of the King, like, doing his penance, fixing his crimes, presumably Bran would also have stripped him of that title. This isn't, like, him being Hand of the King isn't supposed to be a promotion, it's not supposed to be a good thing for Tyrion. It's supposed to be him, you know, righting his wrongs. Doing
badly.
Something he doesn't want to do.
Badly writing his wrongs by putting the money in charge of a man who will steal it.
Yes, well, quite. But, like, but presumably then, because this is supposed to be a punishment, Bran's not going to be like, yeah, but no, you can keep Casterly Rock, it's fine. Like, who's in charge of Casterly Rock now? I need to know.
Overall, I liked that scene, though. It's like, well-written, it's funny. Again, we get some good Tyrion dialogue. I love his little chair moment. It is weirdly light-hearted, though. The whole episode sort of takes a little bit of a mood whiplash from Daenerys' death to the small council, and also the big council as well also has quite lighthearted in tone. I get that a few weeks have passed, but not for the audience. A few minutes has passed for us, and it's just a sort of bit of a jar.
It was a bit of a strange transition anyway, because you see Drogon fly away with Daenerys, and then it just kind of cuts straight away to Tyrion's got a beard now, a much bigger beard than he had, and I'm like, just wow, that's impressive, like 6 minutes of growth, but it's not, it's weeks, and there's Grey Worm, it seems to be sort of more or less have dealt with Daenerys's death, like after Missandei he was mopey and whiny for ages, you know,
and Grey Worm,
like, he was
hasn't
doing his...
murdered Tyrion apparently.
Yeah, and he's just left Tyrion in the cage for, like, 3 weeks or something?
Because,
like,
Grey Worm would have definitely murdered Tyrion.
Yeah, that's... Like, Grey Worm has murdered other people for less. You know, he slit the throats of God knows how many Lannister soldiers just because Daenerys said, like, it's probably a good idea, you know? And then Daenerys gives a direct order to kill the traitor, to imprison and kill the traitor, and she dies, and he's like, oh, well, she's not here, so I guess I can wait for a minute, you know? Like, what... It doesn't really make sense. It doesn't fit Grey Worm's character that so much time has passed and he's done nothing about either Jon or Tyrion. And then, because that makes so little sense, it's then really jarring for us to be like, oh, okay, so this is, like, what, a month later? Like, what, like, suddenly everyone that was in the North is in King's Landing with no warning. You know, like, It was just, I get what you're saying as well about, like, the sort of mood whiplash. Like, it definitely did transition very quickly from, like, very grim and dark to not. But then you don't see, like, any cleanup of the city. You don't see any kind of efforts that have been made other than the fact that, like, Tyrion straightened out a couple chairs.
You literally just see the small council room, and that's it.
Yeah, as far as we know, that could be, like, buried in rubble, and they might have had to, like, you know, scramble over ceilings and floors and walls that have all just collapsed in on themselves.
I love that idea.
To get to the small council, because that's the room they have that in. Or it might be that the castle was rebuilt, you know, like, there's no... We kind of have no idea of, like, where they're at.
Oh, how much time has passed?
Although the camera does track out and we see the floor with the map on it. So that room has been repaired, where they're holding the small council meeting just in the corner.
It's just weird that that's so soon after, and I feel very disparate. So they've hired all but two of, because they still haven't hired two of the members, but they've had enough time to rebuild the castle, and Sam's officially now a maester.
He's got the clothes and everything. So, like, it's just a really weird sort of passage of time, and I know that that's been an issue throughout the whole series. People have always been like, well, he managed to go from King's Landing to the North and back again before Cersei started showing. Like, there's been other issues with time and timekeeping in Game of Thrones, but that one just I could suspend my disbelief for all the other ones, but that one in that last episode just properly threw me out.
But yeah, overall I like that scene a lot. It wraps up a lot of characters really well. Again, Sam, I think he's finally become a maester, and now that it makes, I can see him on the small council really well. Obviously Brienne, like, nice to see her finally wrapped up. You had something to say about her scene as well?
I really liked that scene where Brienne is sort of finishing Jaime's entry in the I can't remember the name of it, but the book of the knights.
White book.
Thank you, the white book. That was obvious, I should have known that. But I really liked that scene, but I feel like it could have been just that tiny bit better and more satisfying to watch if she then turned the page and started writing herself in. You know, because we've seen, like, she wrapped it up for Jaime and she summarised him really nicely. Like, his redemption arc was still there, but she also, in that last sentence in the book, just sort of acknowledged, like, who he was fundamentally, which is really, really nice because it shows that, like, you know, she's moved past it and forgiven him to an extent, which is really, really cool to see because, like, that's the kind of character development you'd expect to see in Brienne. But then it would have been really cool if she'd flipped the page and been, like, Ser Brienne of Tarth, you know, head of the Kingsguard, blah, blah, blah. Like, it would have been really cool to then see that. So we've seen King Bran the Broken, and we've seen the small council that he has chosen, questionable though it is. The other Stark kids, I think they all had, like, pretty fitting resolutions.
So I was a big fan of Arya, because she's sort of a seafaring pirate folk now. I think it makes a lot of sense, because again, you think last episode you said that Arya's clearly having a bit of a struggle with her identity now, because she's no longer got a list of people to kill. The other thing that she had was that she's gone around a lot. She was an explorer who wanted to kill everybody. So her just sort of focusing on that exploring aspect makes a lot of sense. She is one of the sort of most combat formidable characters in the show. So she's the sort of person who could definitely handle herself in a sort of seafaring situation. And she's done a lot of, like, long voyages before as well. So I thought that was, like, really fitting.
It is really cool to see Arya following up on... It's one of the few other things that we've heard her say multiple times in Game of Thrones is what's west of Westeros. And I like that she's sort of found that element of her character and that sort of desire to, like, you know, to explore and to find new places and to travel. I like that she's sort of latched onto that part of herself instead of, like, you know, like, losing her identity completely or trying to remain the sort of girl trained by the House of Black and White, the sort of assassin character, because it's not necessary for her to be anymore. I like that they found a sort of comfortable middle ground where we know that she's not going to go back and be, you know, lady of anywhere. She's not going to marry. She's not going to settle down, but she's still found, like, a way to continue the sort of almost like the childish need for adventure that we knew she had, like, in episode one when she was, like, up a tree or something trying to see the parade of the Baratheons and the Lannisters coming in. It was a really cool sort of character wrap-up, I think. Sansa, Queen of the North. I think this is quite cool. I like it a lot. I definitely think that was foreshadowed this season, definitely, through the sort of the power struggles and the conversations that we've seen her have with Jon and Daenerys. Her sort of primary concern has been the North and the Northmen all the way through this season, which is really cool to see it wrapped up in that way, where she is basically 100% devoting her life to looking after those specific people, her people. It was really cool to see. I like that when she decided that the North was going to be a separate kingdom, she kind of didn't leave any room for argument. She just turned to Bran and was like, I'm going to do this, you do you, but this is happening. And he kind of accepted it, which obviously he would because he's a Stark and he knows those people. But it was really cool to see that, like, that's how that wrapped up for her. I don't like her crown, though.
Did they make another new crown?
Well, yeah, because it's a Stark one. It's like a direwolf.
But didn't they already make the crown for Jon? Is this a new crown?
I don't think Jon had a crown, did he?
Jon didn't have a crown. I think they made one for Robb.
Yeah, there was one for Robb, but that was kind of different. But all of the crowns have the house sigil worked in. So like, if you look back at Robert Baratheon's crown, it's like a bunch of antlers, with like some jewels and stuff on it. But I really don't like Sansa's crown at all. It's just kind of like a band that's like, it looks like a snake. And then we've also got Jon, who, you know, has gone back to square one. They put him back in his season one hair and they sent him back off to his season one fate of joining the Night's Watch. Which, like, what are the Night's Watch watching now?
There is still the land of forever winter.
Yeah, but like, what's out there besides like polar bears?
More giants?
Well, they say that the giants are all dead. The only thing I can think of is that the Night King planned for his possible death, and that winter will come again in the form of a new Night King. Or maybe the children, he's been trying to work some backup plan.
Children of the Forest, are they still about?
No, I think the last of the Children of the Forest died with that chick that was protecting Bran.
Mm.
You know, she sort of exploded herself.
Also, isn't the wall a bit redundant now, since there's a massive hole in it?
Yeah, that was the thing. They never showed them fixing the wall either. They never showed, like, the wall in its entirety ever again. So, like, is there just a gigantic hole in it and they're just, like, the Night's Watch is now exists solely to patch that hole? Like, I don't know what the Night's Watch would be for anymore. There's nothing really a threat. They've made peace with the wildlings, who have all gone north of the wall again. So presumably, if there is anything dangerous heading their way, that the wildlings would let sort of the rest of the Seven Kingdoms know. It just seems a bit strange that he's been sent off to somewhere that seems pretty much obsolete now. And also, he seems to be the only person there that isn't a wildling.
We got Ghost again. Ghost's good.
I did love call Ghost. That was nice to see him give that. It's still really sad to see Ghost with only one ear.
I forgot it had happened. I was like, when did that happen? Did he take that bad care of him? But no, it was
Battle
screen.
Of Winterfell off-screen moment. But yeah, no. Other than seeing Wolf with one ear, other than seeing Ghost with one ear, it was really nice to see like Jon actually have that moment and like satisfy the fans by like petting Ghost. I think that was probably always going to be in there because I think they knew that people would be upset if he just sent Ghost away without anything. But that was also like part of his character at the time, being like he's kind of abandoning a lot of things that he shouldn't in favor of Daenerys. But it was nice to see that come full circle. And apparently, you know, winter was 20 minutes this time around because things are growing again north of the wall. So looks like summer's on its way in. So obviously the last part of the episode that we need to talk about is Daenerys dying. Pretty big moment, I would say. Probably definitely the biggest moment of this series, of this season, if not of the whole series. I kind of knew it was going to happen like that. I'm not sure how I feel about it.
I hated the blocking. When they go up and like hug and kiss and he continues with his one line of the season of "You're my queen." And then it's just so awkward when his body positioning, he clearly has something and it's not a shock to the audience because you can see he's holding himself weirdly and then he stabs her and it's like, oh no.
So like, I think everybody had that prediction kind of. It wasn't really a surprise to anybody when that was how Daenerys went. I was kind of more like waiting for it to happen. It was one of those scenes where I think they tried to feel like more of a dramatic build up. It was really nice to see that shot that called back to her vision from, I think it was the House of Black and White, right? Where she saw herself standing in the throne room. It was almost identical. And you had that moment where she actually finally touched the throne, which was really, really cool. I liked to see that. But then as soon as I realised Jon was in the room with her, I was just waiting for it to happen. Especially when he was going off on all this sort of like, we could forgive them, like crying, whatever. It just didn't seem very Jon either. It felt like a weird sort of desperate deviation away from his character, and then we were just kind of waiting for him to actually kill her. It just felt like the scene could have done with a little bit more of a pace. I think the main sort of surprise of this scene was Drogon, though.
He does appear from nowhere. He goes from being covered in ash outside and then goes flying a bit and then joins the room.
Well, no, he's. I think the idea is that because he settles back down when John walks past, he kind of. I think they had that shot there just to sort of make us aware that Drogon was there, and they had a bit of fun with the CGI snow there. But I think it's. I think it's supposed to be that he's sort of asleep, outside, you know, guarding Daenerys, whatever, and then almost like a sort of, you know, Philip Pullman demon situation, like he feels it when Daenerys dies, because you hear him like screaming, and then he flies up from pretty much directly below. So I don't think he like sort of woke up and wandered off and then came back for Daenerys. I think he was just sort of, you know, woken up by her dying and then like came to melt the chair. Like that was, I was waiting for Jon to die, and then he just melted the chair instead. I was so confused by that.
It falls into the whole, are dragons intelligent? Or are they just animals?
That's it. I'm fairly certain in the books they're supposed to be genuinely intelligent creatures. Definitely, like, I read The Dance of Dragons, and they're all, in that one, the dragons are at the very least very, very intuitive creatures. I wouldn't put them at, like, human levels of intelligence, or I'd probably put them about the same as, like, the direwolves, you know? Like, the Stark's direwolves always knew enough that, like, you know, Summer knew that Bran needed protecting, and Nymeria, like, had that moment of kind of understanding when Arya saw her again. Grey Wind has always been very much, like, a wolf version of Robb Stark, you know? And I think dragons have always kind of supposed to have been in the show, at least at that kind of level of intelligence. Like,
dog, trained dog level.
Yeah, exactly.
Level.
They follow the orders with, like, Jacaris and all that stuff. And it was kind of then weird to see, like, it was almost like Drogon was kind of lashing out at the metaphor of the Iron Throne and everything that it meant.
Daenerys has always been able to control them, but that's because she's got a, like, link with them, you know, that's very well established. But after she dies, there's nothing holding Drogon to anything. I was half expecting him to finish the job of completely destroying the city, you know, everything gets sacked. But no, it's very odd. I like the image and the sort of associations of him destroying the Iron Throne, but it's strange.
It is really odd. And then he picks her up and flies off. Like, why?
I'd go with Scoop.
Yeah, it's a good scoop. It's a good scoop, but I can't work out whether he was like flying off to bury his mother or like taking a packed lunch.
There are theories that are unconfirmed that he's picked up Daenerys and they're heading to Old Valyria, where Drogon was seen by Tyrion before, and that he's basically going to take his mother there so they can be with the Old Valyrians, the dragon riders.
That's fair. I still like the idea that Sheepstealer is out there somewhere. Because that's, I think it's about the only dragon from Dance of Dragons that sort of just flies off and is never seen again. Which would be quite nice, you know, if there was just another dragon out there, maybe we'd get some more dragons further down the line. But it was just a very sort of, quite a fun scene to watch. Like, it didn't throw me out of it or anything like that. It was just one of those ones where I was kind of thinking, what is dragons understand metaphors and power dynamics now? This is new.
Also a little bit sad, back to the inconsistency of Dragonfire, that Jon didn't get burned.
Even a bit of, like, sunburn, red marks.
Yeah, even if it was just, like, part of him was scorched.
Yeah, like his hair was just sort of gently smoking at the end of it or something.
Because he was really near that, and you made the point last week where there are settings on the Dragonfire which explains the whole sacking of King's Landing. But then he's toasting that chair. That is melted metal.
Yeah, by that logic, Jon should at the very least be warm. You know, like, he's wearing a big furry cloak, I think, at that point, or at the very least, he normally has, like, a fur mantle. Like, you would think that would at least be sort of, you know, a little bit roasted, if not, like, his hair would be sort of singed at the edges, or his, like, or, you know, when, like, the edges of a candle or something get, like, the glass gets, like, blackened, you would think that would happen to his costume or something, but no, he comes away from that completely fine. Not even sweating, which is annoying.
It seems a bit of an odd point to end with. John should have been sweatier. But that's all we have time for, and we hope you enjoyed. If you want to continue the discussion or just want to complain about our opinions, then why not tweet us at @the_tasty, or maybe even leave us a voice message here on Anchor. Thank you for listening, and we shall see you again soon.